Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
The following is a presentation of Second City Works, delivered by your earbuds at WGN+.
Welcome to Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. I'm Kelly Leonard, creative advisor for the Second City. We are brought to you by Second City Works, which is the B2B arm of the world-famous Second City Theater. You can find us at secondcityworks.com. And this is more than just a podcast. It's about getting to the yes and moment in your work and your life. The term yes and is a key pillar of improvisation. It's at the front end of creativity. It's about building on ideas and making discoveries together. This is Getting to Yes And.
Working all day for a mean little man with a clip-on tie and a rub-on tan. He's got me running around the office like a dog around a track. But when I get back home, you're always there to rub my back.
My guests today on Getting to Yes And are Carrie Sheehan and Jennifer Kim Matsuzawa. Carrie is the president of Second City Training Centers and Education Programs, where she oversees nearly 6,000 students per week and hundreds of teachers and staff. Prior to Second City, Carrie was the director of educational programs at the Old Town School of Folk Music here in Chicago. She has a bachelor's degree in music theory and composition from the University of Kansas. Jennifer Kim Matsuzawa is the president and director of the People's Music School, which is the only completely free music school serving Chicago's metropolitan area children. Previously, Kim was the global director of strategy and innovation practice for Bain. She is a classically trained pianist who got her undergraduate degree at Northwestern University. Carrie and Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Jennifer, I know that I was only recently introduced to the People's Music School, actually on this podcast by Tracy Seffel when she was on. Can you give us a quick overview of the school and what goes on there?
Absolutely. As you had mentioned, the People's Music School is the only tuition-free music school of its kind actually in the country.
Wow.
We have over 600 students who study with us up to 12 hours a week, and it's an intensive, rigorous program where we try to teach life skills and values and character building through music. So the point is really to develop each student's potential through music, not necessarily to develop future conservatory graduates or professional musicians, but really realize a student's self-worth through music.
Yeah. Carrie, while I suspect the most people know that Second City has a training center, they likely have no idea how vast it is.
Right. I think that a lot of people believe that the Second City Training Center is all about training people to do what we do on our Second City stages. And that is about a third of the story right now. So the school is really, I like to think of it in three different areas. We teach teen and youth from ages 4 to 18. That's about a third of what we're doing. And that's largely focused on improv and writing and stand-up. And then we have a whole other community of people that are taking classes for reasons other than to go on to the professional stages or in the field of entertainment. They're there to meet people. They're there for personal growth and development. They're there simply for fun. And also, in the past few years, we've developed a wellness program that really focuses on attracting people to the study of improvisation for the purposes of dealing with some day-to-day challenges. For example, social anxiety.
Yeah, I'm not going to act like I don't know all about this. So let's let's drop that facade right now, because Carrie and I have worked together for about 10 years. So, if you know, the hostility is going to come out, right?
Yes. I mean, that's... Yeah. Also, I'm pretty upset that in the intro you mentioned that Jennifer is a classically trained pianist, but you did not mention that I was a classically trained pianist. So already I'm feeling a little competitive and thrown off here.
You also play the accordion. Does Jennifer play the accordion?
I do not.
Oh,
right.
See,
there.
Okay.
Me there.
Have
yes.
we balanced the
yeah,
forces?
Yeah, we're all good now.
So this is a thing, right? So here's what I know about the three of us. And Carrie and I have known each other for almost 10 years. Jennifer, we've never met. This is the first time, right? But all of us studied music, although you two are far more accomplished than my 6 years of guitar lessons at the Old Town School. But we've also all had careers where multi-million business deal, dollar business deals were part of the equation, right? We've all done that. We all live in Chicago, and we have the firm belief that art is not only vital, it is necessary to the growth of children and adults. So how did we all get to this place? Jennifer, why are you here today? What brought you to this place, given what you've done?
That's interesting. I actually found the People's Music School when I was a senior at Northwestern University, and I was looking for an internship, and I was a double major in piano performance and philosophy. So
of course you were.
Very high confidence and income generation at that
point. Yeah, right.
I found the People's Music School, and it just clicked for me. You know, music is supposed to be universal and about connectivity, and yet the path to studying it is often exclusive and elite and reserved for people who can not only afford it, but maybe have parents who can support this passion or cultivate it, who have the right kind of support system set up at home to even practice, who have access to teachers and curriculum. There's so many things that make music learning contingent, yet the experience of being an artist and getting to that space and getting the benefits from art, that is so powerful and so universal and transformative. So when I found People's, you know, I remember when I interned, it was very close to registration day, and you see people lining up in front of our school for up to 6 days in sleeping bags and tents.
No.
Yeah, and they sleep out there, and they ask their friends and families to reserve their spot in line until the doors open for registration. And you see this demand. People know, people want this, and there's no other place to get it. We still have a waiting list of several hundred names long, but this was all through word of mouth. So when I found the school, I thought, this is what music is about, this feeling here. So fast forward, I became a teacher there, and then I went off to graduate school and was running other music programs, but I actually really wanted to develop a toolkit to run my programs more effectively. And I had a feeling out there from looking at my my peer group from Northwestern and elsewhere that there were tools that existed, this magical thing called Excel and PowerPoint and strategy, and where do I learn these things and how do I manage? And so I then embarked on a business career, and I was at Bain & Company for about 15 years. I didn't think that I would stay there nearly that long. And in the beginning, I think there were bets in my start class around how long I would actually last.
Right.
You know, she'll be fired within a month. She's the piano teacher. She's the diversity hire. But I really found that my music toolkit, which is really all I had, helped me succeed at Bain. And so I was already seeing that, the powerful toolkit that music gave me, because problem solving is problem solving, whether you're looking at an orchestral score or a piece of data. And I started to just personally experience how useful this toolkit was. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later, but I lost two children before my 7 and 6 year old were born. Mm. And during that time of personal challenge, it was really music that helped me continue, and what I drew from to get through this very traumatic time of mine. And so when I thought about it, and when I moved back to Chicago about 3 years ago, I thought, well, you know, what are some of the most special things about Chicago? And I reconnected with the music school, and they were going through a bit of a hard time. And I thought, maybe now is the time to kind of reapply my passion and some of the new tips and tricks I developed in the business world, and use it to help this cause that I believe in so strongly, because it is about giving kids this toolkit that's going to help them not just graduate high school or get into the right college, but really life is long, and when they are experiencing things in their 30s and 40s and 50s, you know, what's that toolkit that they're going to draw from? And so that's sort of what brought me back, and wanting to scale that, wanting to make sure that the People's Music School stayed an institution, that it was, you know, was facing a deficit, had a huge deficit, and was facing an uncertain future. And I thought it was just vitally important that this cause, this mission, be sustained and grow.
Yeah. I mean, the sense of, and I do want to talk about the sense of sort of resiliency that comes with the arts, because, you know, certainly Carrie and I, our time at Second City are no stranger to a lot of pain mm-hmm. and a lot of loss that drives people there. Mm-hmm. And many of them don't, they're not going there because of that. You know, who knows why they find themselves, but they find it there, and they find practice, and they find belief.
Yeah.
In that, and that happens. I know it happens in music. It's been my experience, right? Mm-hmm. And it happens in the improvisation and in theater and in all those arts. Mm-hmm. And so, Carrie, let's actually start with you at Old Town School, mm-hmm. In terms of you getting in there, and then Second City, in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, how you found yourself, why you found yourself in the place you did.
Mm-hmm. So, as you mentioned, you know, I graduated with a degree in music and a focus on really, you know, playing classical piano, and I did not think that the CSO was going to be calling me to be their, you know, piano soloist. So I really started to explore other things right away. And I got very interested in politics. I became very interested in television and the production world. And I dabbled in a few different things. But at my core, I was always a musician. And I thought, if I could find a way to get a paycheck, a regular mm-hmm. one, mm-hmm. and maybe some health insurance, and be surrounded by the thing that I love, which is music, I will have won the lottery. And I, you know, I dropped off my resume at the Old Town School of Folk Music in the summer of 1995. And I had dropped it off via riding my bike, and I came home and listened to the voicemail via my landline.
Because, your answering machine.
Yeah, my answering machine. And they had already called to see if I could come in for an interview. And I remember when I came in, and I had heard of the Old Town School of Folk Music. I had never taken classes there, but I was immediately like in love with the place. I walked into the building on Armitage, and it's just the coolest place in town. And I still love that building and that vibe so much. And I went in, and when I interviewed with the executive director, he said to me, this would be a really exciting time to join the staff here, because they had just been given the old Hild Library up on North Lincoln Avenue. Mm-hmm. And I said, great, sounds good, sign me up. And, you know, I started there. Relatively quickly went up the ranks of what was a very small administration then. And then I got into that lead role of overseeing all of the education programs. And it was life-changing for me. You know, I felt like I could use other parts of my brain aside from, you know, just my music skills. But yet I was around musicians. I felt that because I was a musician, it helped me relate to the faculty better and the patrons of the Old Town School. And I loved it. It was a dream job.
Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is that you and I both, you know, started in a similar, you know, I was a dishwasher at Second City, right? I started the bottom rung. You did at Old Town School. And we rose in the ranks, and we developed sort of business capability. Jennifer, you did as well, and sort of with that business capability. And I think for many people, they would think once you move that to business, you stay in business. And what I've found is that that business experience is absolutely wonderful, because it gives you just an expanded toolkit to return to what is essentially important, vital work. Because I do think there is immense healing properties in the arts. Mm-hmm. I know I've seen it. I've seen transformations in individuals. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like without the rigor, without the ability to relate to people who are outside the industry, or, mm-hmm. or give them the trust that you can, you know, make this stuff work, mm-hmm. right? So you mm-hmm. walked into People's Music School and it was in debt.
It was. Yeah, so we had a six-figure deficit, and it was about 25% of our operating budget. And to get new funders, we had to convince them that our business model was strong.
Yeah.
And I really see our supporters as investors. So the more you can speak to them as, here's a return that you're getting on your investment, here's the impact that you are making, and have cultivate a relationship with them that shows that their dollars are actually having great impact, and speak a language of efficiency, effectiveness, even some market principles in there, the more you are going to get engagement and a broadening base of supporters.
Yeah. And Carrie, you've got like, you have everything from parents who are spending a lot of money for a college program at Second City. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people coming in for professional services, right, mm-hmm. who are there to, you know, skill up.
It's, you know, we have the spectrum there. We mm-hmm. have people who are there on scholarship and they really want to pursue a career in entertainment. And as you said, Kelly, we have a college program. We just started a film school. We have a senior citizen improv program that I think is absolutely fantastic. So it is really, it truly is all walks of life in those doors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jennifer, you have a great quote, and it's not just about getting into the right high school or college. It's about how you're going to handle challenges. Mm-hmm. So right on our way up here, Carrie and I both have daughters who are taking the MAP test and the selective enrollment test, right, to get mm-hmm. into high school. And both of our daughters took it at Lane, and Lane Tech High School is huge and intimidating. I have a son in college. You know, what is it about this in terms of that you can learn in the arts school that can prepare you for those kinds of challenges when you're going up into higher ed?
I think there are so many applications of an arts education that help that. I think for those of us who studied an instrument, just the idea of really mastering a piece of music, right? Breaking it down into smaller parts, practicing it over and over and over again until you get it right. There's a discipline that comes from that and a sort of just an earnestness and a feeling of hard work, and then the pride that comes from achieving something. I truly believe that most of music is not necessarily about talent, but effort. I really mm-hmm. feel like I can almost teach anybody how to play mm-hmm. piano, and there are rewards there for the effort that you put in. But then also, you know, we stress performance a lot, and I know that at Second City you do as well. And I remember I was talking to somebody who didn't quite understand the importance of performance. They thought, well, you know, why don't you just teach? And isn't that making the students uncomfortable? Or, you know, why are you putting so much pressure on them? And I said, you know, it's like an athlete never playing in a game. How can mm-hmm. you not stress performance? Yeah. This is the moment where everything has to come together. You tackle your nerves and you rise to the occasion. You rise to that moment, even though there's so much pressure. And I think when you walk into an exam, when you walk into a test or a situation like getting into the right high school or college, you know, that ability, the skills you learn to prepare, to keep your nerves calm, to rise up and really conquer something. I mean, all of those are presented in many challenge platforms through mm-hmm. music, and then you can apply that experience to any situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this assumption of mastery, mm-hmm. right, that people have without, and you see this at Second City, like when we do auditions and people are auditioning after taking, you know, one class kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, that's not it. You have so much failure, so much beautiful failure ahead of yourself.
right?
Yeah, and I also would add that at the same time, while, you know, a serious music education, you know, certainly something more classical in nature, there is that long game, that commitment, that dedication. But additionally, what I love, too, about certain arts programs, I'm sure, you know, some at Peoples, and definitely it's what the Old Town School of Folk Music is founded on, is the ability to make something immediately. Without mm-hmm. having to, and not without having to go through the work, but really to find some success right away to kind of hook you. You know, what I would add on the skill building front of that is the idea of ensemble and community. I mean, I was, for a lot of my music education career, a solo musician. And when I went over to the Old Town School of Folk Music, I remember Steve Levitt asking me if I'd play the piano in the Grateful Dead ensemble. And I'm like, you want me to play the piano? Like, what do I do? Like, what do you want me to do? And he's like, just play. You know, you can read a chord chart. Just play. And I'm like, oh, my God. Wait, you can make music with other people? I mean, I had been in band, but it's just, you know, like, you know, right. High school band. Mm-hmm. Maybe later we edit that part out of this. I don't know. But you know, this idea of like making music with people is really powerful. And obviously at Second City, it's all about the ensemble. I mean, everything that we do is about engaging with other people. And then the skills that come from that are completely life-changing.
Right. So let's shift to that, because I do want to talk about community. Mm-hmm. So I was 12 years old when I started guitar lessons. But as important as the practice was, which I get, it was the first time that I felt I was part of a community that wasn't preordained by my parents. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the same sense of liberation from my kids in their relationship with theater and music mm-hmm. programs that are out of school. And so, you know, what is the importance in the sense of community in your space, and what does it mean?
Yeah, actually, being part of a group or ensemble is a requirement in our program as well. So we teach over 14 different instruments, and we have over 25 different ensembles, ranging from classical, jazz, rock, spoken word, contemporary, teen choir. And the reason why we build that in, even though it is expensive to provide that, it's one more thing, is because we're exactly trying to teach what you're talking about, which is collaboration, active listening. How do you make all these voices sing together? And even leadership. So, you know, for each of the ensembles, there are student leaders that lead different rehearsals and lead their chamber groups or rock band on bowings or breath marks or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, I remember during my time at Bain, and as I got more senior and I needed to manage more people, it was about, for me, chamber music. You know, how do I make my team sing? How do I, you know, I might need to reallocate people so that their voicing is right. But there's a lot of intuitive team leadership that you are able to build through music.
Yeah, I don't think people think this through because they do think of either the soloist or the orchestra. Right. And what they don't realize that is absolutely vital, I think, for all artists is this idea that they are both working on their instrument, and their instrument is always in connection with an audience and usually an ensemble as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and this is the thing that's kind of amazing about Second City, which is we are known for producing stars. Mm-hmm. Yet our entire orientation is ensemble based. Mm-hmm. And the only people who really succeed at Second City are those who support their fellow ensemble members. Mm-hmm. And that would seem counterintuitive, but it's not in the classes. I think people get it pretty quickly.
Yeah, we sort of break down that diva syndrome kind of on day one. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of people are drawn to taking classes, kids in particular. Actually, kids and adults might be drawn because people told them they're the funny guy at the office or they're the class clown in school. And so they kind of come in with that approach, maybe thinking more along the lines of stand-up. And they might come in the room with a gigantic personality and look at me, it's all about me, I'm going to be the funniest person in here, and boy, do our teachers good at sort of neutralizing that situation immediately. And it all comes from, you know, embracing the ensemble, and, you know, it's an equal playing field, and you will be the most successful person in the room if you make every other person also the most successful person in the room.
And especially for young people today, how powerful is that message in a day where everyone is a selfie star and mm-hmm. you know, can mm-hmm. have their own platforms on any social media site. You know, the emphasis on collaboration or teamwork and the fact that you can be a star by making somebody else shine. Those are powerful messages that are counter to a lot of things that kids are seeing out there.
Yeah, and conversely, mm-hmm. For a lot of young people, because they've lived in a sharing environment, mm-hmm. they have an orientation that's different to sharing than is in the room.
Right.
So I think it's almost the opposite of what it used to be, right? They have all this sort of skill set for sharing that they've built up because they're in a sharing economy and a sharing world, mm-hmm. but then they get in a room and they can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And that's the thing, you know, certainly for our work in the improvisational work, which is forces a level of intimacy that, you know, no one thinks they want. Mm-hmm. And then they get into it and it's very powerful.
It is very intimate, isn't it? When you are making art with somebody or performing with somebody, you're really reliant on your
Oh, harmonizing?
Right, exactly.
That is an amazing thing when you hear people be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be vulnerable.
I was just going to say vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
See, Jennifer and I are going to be fast friends after this.
I know.
We might rival your relationship, actually.
You've already outpaced it. I think Carrie and I both know this. All right, I got a question for both of you. Do kids find the instrument, or does the instrument find the kid?
We like to, I'll go ahead. Okay, we like to say that a student's instrument is their voice, and they find each other. So at our school, the way the mechanics work is if you ask a student, one of our students, when they walk in, what would you like to play, 90% of them are going to say piano or drums. And then the other 10% mm-hmm. might say guitar. They've never heard an oboe or a bassoon or any of these other instruments before. And so we actually don't allow them to give us their preference in the beginning. So the few that are accepted every year into one of our few spots, they are put through an exploration program in the beginning. And we do different, we invite guest musicians to come, brass quintets or woodwind quartets or, you know, solo musicians to say, you know, here's a trombone, here's what that sounds like. And we do, you know, personal interviews with each student and, you know, see what their embouchure looks like or, you know, what sound they like. And we do sort of a matching exercise. And so by the end of that semester, then they are all sort of matched with their own voice. And, you know, we present a few options to them and then they preference those three. And they're often surprised by what they end up with. Mm-hmm. But that's how that happens for us.
What do you think, Kara?
You know, I'm not really sure, but I'll speak from my own, you know, personal situation, which was, I took to the piano because my dad was a jazz pianist, and mm-hmm. that was the instrument that was in the house, and I heard him playing it, and I learned by ear from him, and my own, I play a few other instruments now, and they're all in my house now, and I think that's why my daughter plays guitar, and she plays keyboard, and, you know, we've exposed her to different things. So I'm not really sure, but I definitely feel like, you know, that early exposure to what you're seeing on a regular basis helps to influence it.
I think it's that with the improviser as well. I think because what you end up doing as an improviser is you're finding your comic voice and your comic mm-hmm. POV. And it's funny because my wife and I, our son Nick, very much started out as a clown because that's how he got his laughs. Mm-hmm. And he's evolved as an improviser over the years that now he's starting to emulate those people he saw on the stage mm-hmm. Or the people he admires like Colbert, where that's like, oh, you're doing verbal stuff now. You're elevating your game. Mm-hmm. So it was always deeper than that. You just used the thing you had because you could get a laugh. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to sort of look at that. All right, so you guys have both had pretty cool guests in the house in the last like 10 days. right? You know who I'm talking about?
I think so. Are you going to mention Paul Feig?
Well, you just did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I did. And you know, tragically, I was not there the day that he was there. So I myself did not get to meet Mr. Feig, but from all accounts, he is the nicest guy. Also, the most well-dressed man.
He
in
looked sharp.
The business.
That gray
and
suit.
And I have since Googled him and just mm-hmm. clicked on images. He always looks like that. He's amazing. He's a really nice guy. He spent the entire day with our Harold Ramis Film School students. He then did a Q&A with the broader Second City community, and it's like, oh my gosh, these people that reach success and then give back, I am just in love with them.
Yeah, and I mean, from, you know, the reboot of Ghostbusters back to Freaks and Geeks, which for any comedy person is a Rosetta Stone of comedy, Paul's done amazing work. Mm-hmm. All right, and you had someone kind of cool, right, Jennifer?
Actually, we've had this embarrassment of riches this past week. We're preparing for our 40th anniversary, and we have a birthday bash on November 4th, but in preparation for this milestone, we had Emmanuel Axe, Yo-Yo Ma, and Jimmy Chamberlain, the drummer of the Smashing Pumpkins, all in 1 week. And
there's a trio.
It was literally mind-blowing. And, you know, from this little school that nobody had ever heard about, even though we've been around forever, because we do no marketing, it's all word of mouth, it's 100% tuition-free, so we're not attracting necessarily those families that have resources and money, to then get to a point where we had these three incredible, really artists, you know, not just musicians, but, you know, people who have just such a broad perspective on how arts play into humanity, just visit our school and inspire our kids and work with them together. You know, it was amazing for them. You know, it's not just that they came, but why they came. Mm-hmm. And to give kids that experience that these people think you're important enough to spend time with, you know, that just gives them an experience and a feeling of self-worth that they're going to take with them as they grow older, you know? So that was, it's been pretty special and exciting over at the school.
I think that's such an important point, that it's not that they came, but why they came. And because people often might just make an appearance, and that might be for their own benefit. But, you know, I know our experience, we were just so tremendously lucky because, I mean, Paul, he really imparted his wisdom. He gave his time. He was completely honest. And I mean, that's just an experience that these kids can't get otherwise. It's very generous.
Well, and it's a reminder too that that's not just something reserved for celebrities.
That's right.
So, you know, that children in particular know when you're present.
Mm-hmm.
And they know when you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I vividly remember this from my earliest guitar classes at Old Town School, because I had a great teacher who kind of lost it and left. And then your old boss took over, Jim, who was my teacher, which was great. And I got him back. But I could sense what was going on without knowing what's going on. And the music and the community were so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving to Second City and suddenly being in this world where it is not all that different. And it emanated in terms of Old Town School and Second City in a very similar way, very connected, too. I mean, this was a counterculture movement that shared a lot of history and story and characters. And you guys are at the People's School is in Uptown, right?
Well, we have four locations. So
kids
come from everywhere, and they come from everywhere, even to our Uptown location. But that's our hub and our home and our home base. But we have a very big site in Albany Park and back of the yards and also in Englewood. So we have two sites on the north side, two sites on our south side. And over 50% of our students come from the south side.
Okay. And give this is your plug time. You got a big bash coming up. Tell people how they can get tickets and check it out.
Yeah. If you can go to our website at www.peoplesmusicschool.org. It's the first visual that you see there. We still have a few tickets left, and we're honoring Jimmy Chamberlin, who the drummer of the Smashing Pumpkins. And it's funny because when we were planning this event, everyone said, "All right, well, which bank president are you going to be honoring?" And I said, "Bank president? I'm new to this." I'm like, "Bank president? What do you mean? I don't know any bank presidents." And they said, "Well, you know, like that's how you're going to raise a lot of money for this event." And I said, "Well, that's not exactly who we are, though. You know, we are a scrappy, beautiful community. Every family that comes in, they wait, and then they volunteer, too, to stay in the program. So even though there's no money exchange, they are working. They're cleaning the building. They're monitoring. They're doing security. They're doing roof tuck pointing. Like, we have this really grassroots community, and there's this mission that we believe in, that music is transformative. And when I thought about who I wanted to honor for our 40th, I was introduced to Jimmy Chamberlin last year, and he's been involved with the school, and his life arc is actually incredibly inspirational. He's been through a lot. And then, you know, most recently as a tech CEO, an investor, and representative of Chicago and various South by Southwest and World Business Chicago, different venues. And he talks about how music has helped him do all of these other things. And you know, people ask him, "How does it feel not doing music anymore?" And he said, "What are you talking about? I do music every day. When I listen to a tech pitch, when I am, you know, running my company, it's all about melody or harmony or, you know, whatever musical concept that's his foundation." So when he comes and talks to our kids, he talks a lot about accountability to your instrument and how that's a primary sort of responsibility, and the authenticity of art and music, and how, you know, his most proud moment was actually not selling out Madison Square Garden, but actually mastering a certain combination on the drums. And so I thought, well, this is who I want to honor for our 40th. Yeah. You know, that encapsulates this transformation story. And our theme is Tonight Tonight, which is one of my favorite Pumpkin songs. You know, the lyrics are, "The impossible is possible, the embers never fade in the city by the lake." So you'll hear a number of performances by our kids, all inspired by this song, and then a pretty special finale, including Jimmy and our kids. The whole thing is not your mother's tea party. It is at Lacuna Lofts. It's an art-filled space with a lot of performances, so we'd welcome guests to join us on that evening.
That sounds so cool.
Kelly, we're going.
Yes.
I would like to go.
Let's go.
Carrie, how about you? Like, you got a million things going on right now. What should people know about?
Well, we have a million things going on, and, you know, there's so many different types of programs at Second City, and I would love to plug them all, but I think instead what I would love is if, I'm not kidding when I say if every single person, young and old, took an improv class, or even better yet, did it for over a period of time and kind of kept that muscle going, this would be a better planet.
Amen.
So that is my plug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Also,
completely.
You could also sign up for classes at Second City, and we have a website, although it is not good. It is not a good website, but you can go to secondcity.com and or call
You'll
us.
Eventually find the information.
You will eventually find the information or become so frustrated that you'll come over to our building and walk up our escalators
and do
that don't work.
Well, yeah, but exercise is good for you.
It is.
And it's a third space, you know, which mm-hmm. is what both of you have. Okay, so we end every one of these podcasts by asking for a personal yes and story. So here's the idea, which is when you are making something out of nothing, what we've learned at Second City is you can't do that and say no. And you can't do that by saying yes. You have to say yes and. You have to affirm and contribute to be able to explore and heighten. So I'm going to ask each of you, and I'll start with Carrie, because she should know. What's the yes and story in your life?
Okay, so this is going to just feel like I'm brown nosing here to both you and the ownership of Second City, but honestly, the big yes and thing for me was in fact coming over to meet with you all when I was just happily employed minding my own business over at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and I got a phone call out of the blue, and this position was available, and I quite frankly I did not have any interest in it, but I thought to myself, you know, the Old Town School and the Second City are both at the time 50-year-old organizations, and I said, I can't believe that I don't know the people that run the Second City. I mean, we both started in Old Town. The musicians from the early days and the actors, they all hung out across the mm-hmm. street at the Earl of Old Town. So I'm like, I have to go over and meet these guys. And I met Kelly and Tom Yorton. And, it, you know, within, honestly, just a couple minutes, I was like, okay, these guys are cool.
Yeah, we did a lot of bits.
We did a lot of bits. It was really, and I'm like, I'll continue on with the process. And it was actually a pretty elaborate process.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, and so I think that to me, because that's completely life-changing. And it was, you know, it's been a great experience. And honestly, it was, I just kind of, yeah, you just yes-anded myself on that one and went for it. And, you know. What a great decision that was.
And I will do a yes and as a bridge to yours, Jennifer.
Are you going to tell the part about how now you didn't want to offer me the job?
I wasn't going to go there.
Let's go there.
But now you have to.
But yeah, I this is true. I thought what ownership wanted was not what Carrie had, and I liked her and wanted to make sure she'd succeed. So there was another fantastic candidate. I'm not going to say his name because I think he's still working in Chicago. But, you know, this is true. You know,
I won in the end, and that's the important thing.
You've just ruined the podcast with that, right? Because it's about winning. All right, let me do my yes and bridge story, which is it's the Old Town meets Second City. So across the street, which is now Corcoran's Bar, so go enjoy a pint and a chicken sandwich, used to be the Earl of Old Town. Great folk club back in the day. And one of the very famous stories was that Steve Goodman, who is, you know, the legendary musician who composed and wrote Go Cubs Go, which we're all about this week with the Cubs in the World Series. One of his best friends was a mailman from Harvey, Illinois, named John Prine, who was not known at all. It was like 21, maybe. And Steve Goodman was opening for Kris Kristofferson at a big sort of arena, almost like an arena date, I think, and said afterwards, you've got to go see my buddy. And it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and they get there, and there's right across from Second City, and all the stools are up, no one's there. And Kristofferson's like, this is a nightmare. And John Prine takes a chair down, gets out his guitar, and does the entire first John Prine album. And Chris Christopherson's like, this is the greatest musician I've ever seen in my life. And got Paul Anka to sign him and record that album. And that happened all across the street from Second City. Yes and behind that is when the Blues Brothers was filming here, the movie, that's where the Blues Brothers bar was. So it was an illegal bar that only people who worked on the film and cops could get into, because that's how it stayed open.
Right.
And Second City people, but I was too young. We were both, Carrie and I were babies. We couldn't go to that. And there were not good things happening in there, I'm sure. So now that I've sullied the whole thing, what's your yes and story?
You know, I think that it's a little bit similar to Carrie's story. It was actually about my move back to Chicago. So I grew up in Chicago. I love the city, but it was always a city where I thought, if I didn't grow up here, I would really love it here. But there was something in me that wanted to explore the rest of the world and see what else was out there. And I got to move to Asia, and I got to move to New York, and I was living in New York and making things work and really loving that city. But then something, you know, various opportunities came up to move back, and nothing that was that strong until my mother was just very ill. And, you know, without really thinking about it too much, there was just an inner voice that said, I think it might be time to move back, and maybe it's not permanent, and we'll just see. We'll just move back temporarily. And so we were packing up, and I transferred my job with Bain & Company from New York to Chicago. And while I was packing up, the phone rang, and the assisted living facility where my mother was at called and said, your mother has just passed away. And I said, but I'm going to be there in like 4 hours. Like, they're packing up the truck and I'm on my way. And I then had to go into the moving truck to get clothes for a funeral. You know, I didn't unpack that. I had to get pictures for the funeral, you know. And I was just in this daze. And then I thought, I did feel like at that moment I said, wait a second, maybe I don't have to move. Like, you know, maybe, wait a second, we're disrupting everything, but, you know, the main reason why we're moving is for my mother, and maybe that doesn't have, you know, I was just, there were 200 ideas going through my mind at that time. But then, you know, just said, all right, well, for some reason, I'm coming back to Chicago. And, you know, I moved my family here, and I was working at Bain. I didn't, you know, why am I did this in New York. Why am I here in Chicago? And, you know, I feel like a series of like yes ands. All right, well, then let's explore. And then reconnecting with the school and then saying yes to the school. Like, you know, sometimes it's not very well thought out, but there's paths in life that open up to you. And I remember just because I just didn't know what to do, I just kind of said yes to a few things and ended up at the People's Music School, where I just feel like this is the place for me to be at right now. So I'm really grateful that life sort of led me back here.
That's perfect.
It's just so easy to be comfortable and then not change anything and just go about life like that. And I think the idea of making yourself a little uncomfortable, it's so beneficial in the end.
When I was thinking about having both of you on and knowing a bit of the backstory, I'd actually written down this quote by Benjamin Disraeli, which said, there is no education like adversity. And the other thing that I know is true, which is that no originality comes out of comfort. You know, discomfort is where that comes from. And it's hard, you know, but the thing about music and the thing about improv is it gives you that practice to get knocked down and get back up. And to your point earlier, you know, yes, you can practice in your room, but you got to get out and play. All right, thanks guys for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Well, I've been working in a coal mine going down.